RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
So to the imprisonment of David McBride in Australia for whistleblowing activity regarding war crimes committed in Afghanistan. He revealed atrocities committed by Australian soldiers there, including the murder of civilians. Despite not being involved in the crimes, he was the only person jailed for the exposure, not the perpetrators. He's just done about 100 days of a nearly six-year sentence, and representing him is lawyer Eddie Lloyd, principal lawyer at Lloyd Law. Describes herself as a double-speak translator on her X account. She was also a Greens candidate for the Australian Senate in the 2020... Will it be four? I've got five here. How can that be possible? Federal. 2025, oh, that is right. Federal election. Eddie, thanks for coming on RCR and having a chat.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Great to be here.
Okay, so David McBride has served already about 100 days of the sentence. How's he doing?
Look, he's a really optimistic kind of guy, but he, the kind of glow has gone out of him, unfortunately. The reality of the jail life has started to kick in. He's never really had a good night's sleep since he's been there. He's someone that has received a couple of death threats already, and he's been moved four or five times already due to safety concerns. He sleeps with one eye open every night. Nowhere safe in jail. You know, they're just wherever he goes, he's in danger, of course. And that's the travesty of the situation. He shouldn't be there amongst, sex offenders and people who've murdered children and whatnot. But that's exactly where he finds himself. And this is where whistleblowers find themselves in Australia at the moment. And you know, he did much, much more than expose some war crimes. He was exposing the leadership that should have been held accountable and asking questions of them and why they weren't complying with the law. And that's why he received such a significant sentence.
What was his role in the military, Eddie?
He was a lawyer in the military. It was his job to uphold the law. And as boring as that might sound to some people, that is, if we don't have people upholding the law, then there will just be chaos and the government can do whatever they want. He saw the government not upholding the law. He saw people up above him bending the rules. And he stood up and said something and started asking questions. And the more answers he got, the more suspicious he got, the more cover-ups he found out and tried to expose. And when no one would listen to him, when he complained, he went to the media, which was what he believed his right to do under the whistleblower laws in Australia. You're meant to be protected by those laws. If every internal investigation or investigator or agency has failed you, you're allowed to go to the media. But when he went to the media, instead of protecting him under the whistleblower laws, they decided to charge him and tell him he's not protected because they removed all the evidence that he sought to rely on for his protection. So the government has kind of stepped in and intervened within the court's remit and removed evidence. It's just been an unbelievable situation here.
Removed evidence. What was the evidence?
All of his evidence. So that's what happened at the trial as well. All of the evidence that he wanted to rely on to show the jury that he was acting in the public interest in exposing the leadership, they removed it under these national security, provisions that say, oh, no, we can't show anyone that. That's too top secret for that. So they removed the evidence. The judge wasn't even allowed to see some of the evidence. It still sits in a safe today in the Supreme Court. He didn't even look at the evidence. He just had to take the word of the government in that. That's just too top secret, too sensitive. And, of course, David McBride has maintained there was nothing sensitive about the information. It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing to the government. And there were lots of people named, but sensitive, no. I mean, we're talking about events that happened, 10 years ago by the time he went to trial. There's nothing secretive about what he sought to expose. It was really, in his mind, a cover-up of the leadership who just wanted to, not have blood on their hands and Australian public to see what was really going on. So the fight's not over yet because we're lodging the appeal this week and hope to have that on as soon as we can. And we're appealing both his sentence and his conviction.
Right. Though he must have had information to become a whistleblower eventually. How much did he know? What did he know?
Well, I don't know because I haven't seen it yet, but I've had a safe come to my where I work with classified information to be delivered any day. I'm still waiting for that to be delivered, and then I'll know what's in the safe, but I'm not allowed to talk about it. At all.
Okay.
I'm not even allowed to talk about it with Mr. McBride over an AVL conference. I'm not even allowed to talk about it with him in the jail. They have to take him out of the jail and they've suggested that we go to the Australian Government Solicitor's Office where we can talk about this highly sensitive material, and not sure that I feel comfortable about sitting in a government office without fearing that it's probably bugged there as well. I hate to sound like a conspiracy theorists, but this is the world that we're living in today. This is the world that we're living in today, and nowhere really is safe, you know, to talk about this highly sensitive material. But we'll see what's in. We'll see what's in there. From what I've heard, what I know, it's about really about Australian ADF forces entering into operations unlawfully in different jurisdictions, and it's about people who were at in various places at the time that these heinous war crimes were being committed, that knew about them. And for some, they were the people that were awarding awards and medals on soldiers again and again and again, knowing full well that they were involved in some serious crimes, including murder.
And we can assume that the higher-ups were aware of that. I mean,
the higher-ups were aware of that. That's been McBride's entire case, is that he wanted to expose the leadership. He didn't know for fact that there were these crimes going on at the time. What happened for McBride as a lawyer, it's a pretty boring story. He just noticed that the procedures weren't being complied with, and all of a sudden new rules were being introduced, and he started asking a question, because your job as a government lawyer is to make sure that everyone upholds the law without fear or favour. You don't do something different because you're a member of the ADF. He's a lawyer first, and the lawyers have a duty to the public to make sure that they uphold the law and the rule of law. And when he saw that wasn't happening, he was going, why aren't we following the law? What's going on here? And the more questions, the answers just got more and more suspicious and started digging around. And it's been much later that he's obviously realised, looking back, that's what they were covering up. It's very clear now that they were covering up their culpability, their involvement, their knowledge about what was going on at the time, particularly in 2012.
Because usually it's protecting sources, right, and all those sorts of explanations are given for keeping things secret. But the time span kind of removes that, the credibility of that, doesn't it?
Well, McBride has always claimed that there's been nothing that sensitive that the public shouldn't know about, that he hasn't been permitted to speak about. But yes, you're absolutely right, Paul. You know, I mean, a decade's gone past. Like, who cares what happened on a hill in Afghanistan 10 years ago, where the toilet was? You know, like, is it really classified? Because everything in that Operation Slipper, it was called over that period, was deemed classified. And that is like the location of the toilet, where the bread was kept, what shelf. Everything came under this classified umbrella. And it's got this top security classification on it. So there's a lot of stuff in there that's probably not classified at all, that is just under that banner of classified material. But, you know, that was one of the reasons he got the most severe sentence, we believe, is because the judge put too much weight on, you know, the risk, the harm factor, like how he had harmed our relations with, international other jurisdictions. But there was no evidence before the court that any such harm had actually occurred. It was all about maybe in the future, you know, they won't trust us because we've had a leak of information. It was really quite ridiculous. So, yeah, it's a two-pronged attack at the appeal. It's the severity of sentence. We want to appeal that, as well as the conviction. If we don't have luck with the conviction appeal, then we'll think about going to the High Court, which will be, it's the ultimate court in Australia, and the government can't overrule the High Court.
The judge's thinking, and what you've just described, is that what a judge should be thinking about foreign policy implications that are really nothing to do with what's actually going on in the courtroom, or am I missing something?
No, well, it's actual harm. Did he cause actual harm? And there was no evidence of actual harm. There was just reference to, you know, other nations, you know, that they had to be told that, Mr. McBride had leaked some material about an operation that happened 10 years before, but there was no proof before the court that he had. There was no proof from any other country that he had. So we think that that was an error of the court. And the other error of the court was that the judge placed too much weight on general deterrence, which is one of the many sentencing principles that a judge must take into account. And that is the general deterrence principle, that I must give you such a severe sentence to deter other people from doing what you did, Mr. McBride, and that was being a whistleblower. That's what he did. So it sent a chill down the backside of all of Australians in that sentence, because he was just doing his job, and that is the one common factor among all whistleblowers. They're actually just doing their job, and that's what they're getting in trouble about. You know, when they see that people are bending the rules in their workplace and not doing what they should be, they are the ones that end up getting charged, and he is the only one in jail as a result.
Yet politicians are quite prepared to do happy talk about whistleblowers and how crucial they are and the role of whistleblowers, and kind of encouraging the concept. It's really put to the test, and what happens?
Yeah. Well, just a massive failure. And that's because the whole, you know, the case of McBride, and same with the a few other cases in the pipeline, they have been politicised. You know, they've all got their grubby little hands in it. They're all involved, and these whistleblower laws don't offer any protection. I mean, if a lawyer can't be offered protection under the whistleblower laws for doing his job as a lawyer, then nobody can, you know, really. And he's not, you know, nobody is going to be. So it's really all talk with our government here, and a great failure because, of course, we want to see more transparency in our government. We want to see who's making all the decisions. We want to see who's getting paid for what. And that's what we're seeing become more and more secretive as we move into this autocratic, state of government that's happening now in Australia. And I hope that's not the case in New Zealand. But
Probably do things in a similar way. So I'm just trying to map this out, and I'm sure our audience are right now. So this happened, okay, a decade or so ago.
Yeah.
I think we're talking about a couple of dozen murders at least, maybe just more than that. 39 is the figure I saw.
Yeah.
And it would be fair to say that there was an awareness of that in the military organization somewhere. How far it goes up, well, we don't know yet. But You would imagine a responsible, honourable military leader, as soon as they found out about that, would want it investigated immediately. And then, in the honourable tradition that I thought we held these people in, and history certainly reinforces that, the way we're sold this, that they would come out and say, this has happened. And this is how it's going to be dealt with. I mean, there's nothing on the leadership if they're not involved.
No.
It can only look good for them, if you want to think of it in those terms, credible, responsible, honourable military folk. But they didn't do that, did they?
There were some rumours going around. But, you know, let's just be frank here. The rumours were going around years after these events happened, where key people were in key positions. Generals, Governor General now, you know, the Chief of the Army, the Chief of the Defence Force, they were all in different positions and roles during these killing years, okay?
Yeah.
They knew. They must have known. They would have known much more than McBride had vague suspicions. He heard about things. He was in Bungendore in Canberra most of the time. So there are people on the ground in these very high-up positions that must have known, and must have known when they were awarding medals to particular people. So after the rumours had come out and they couldn't shut them down anymore, they set up this Brereton Inquiry, which was also named as the Afghanistan Inquiry. It became known as the Brereton Inquiry because another Governor General was appointed called Paul Brereton to head up this inquiry. And in that inquiry, they picked all the low-hanging fruit, okay? It was all about soldiers, all about the naughty soldiers, and not one bit of blame was put or accountability was served on anyone in the higher up at all. So when the Brereton report came out, it was full of redactions. Like, there's hardly anything there for the public to see. There are 39 unlawful killings by about 19 people. And then they set up a separate agency called the Office of Special Investigator, which is set up to investigate those 39 unlawful killings. But because the way the inquiry was set up, that people had to be compelled to give evidence, none of the evidence that was compelled by soldiers can be used. And you can bet your bottom dollar, a lot of those redactions underneath those black lines, it says, he knew, he knew, he knew, he knew, he knew. I was following orders. That person in that role told me to do this. None of that came out in the public. And so very recently, thankfully, there was one other measure of accountability on top of the Brereton inquiry where there was a three-person panel to do a report to make sure that the Afghanistan inquiry didn't miss anything out. And that report came out on the day that David McBride was sentenced. It was sat on for months. The day of his sentence, when everyone was focused on McBride and not looking, the government released this report. And that report is scathing, scathing of the Brereton inquiry. Why haven't the any accountability been, you know, from the leadership? That it was just scathing all about that. So nothing's happened with that report, but we hope a lot of people are starting to realise that everything in that report corroborated David McBride, and it was just very sneaky of the government to release it on the day he was getting sentenced and not beforehand, because that certainly would have assisted him in his trial.
Is it reasonable to consider that this could even be bigger than we think?
It is so big. It is like Pandora's box. Like, people seem to have a certain opinion on David McBride and his motives and the complex case. It's not very complex at all, Paul. It's pretty simple. It's a David and Goliath battle, you know, that has been going on and on and on again throughout our lives, you know, for hundreds of years, where we have a small person who is trying to expose a big problematic issue. And here it is, the issue is in the ADF and is with the government. And they have just pushed all their resources on David McBride. They spent millions of dollars prosecuting him, and they're going to spend millions of dollars trying to keep his mouth shut and keep him in jail. So it's our job to get him out of jail. But of course, you know, we are very low on funds. So we're asking people to chuck in some money to the Chuffed David and Goliath fundraiser if they can, because we're up against it and we don't want to come to this fight, you know, with just a little sword in our hand against all of the fire and fury that the government are going to, you know, point in our direction.
There's the military, but then there's the political class. Surely top politicians, top ministers, prime ministers are well aware of the details of this and have been all along. They must be.
And you've probably got the same issue in New Zealand, where you've got this duopoly that's running the country of the two major parties and then the minor people. And this is like both governments, the coalition and the Labor government, have both been in power at different times along the way. So it's in their interest to cover up. And the most interesting thing is, Paul, that at the last election in 2019, I think, or sorry, I could have that wrong, that one of the big issues was that there wasn't enough transparency in government. And we wanted to see a corruption committee set up, you know, a corruption commission, a federal corruption commission to investigate things like that. So the Labor government went to, you know, it was one of the big election issues that they took to the last election, and they got elected. And so they set up this commission and they said, it's not public. They won't make it public. And guess who's the head of that commission? Paul Brereton from the Brereton Inquiry.
Bingo.
So hidden all skeletons over there, and then rewarded with a job from his mate into heading up a corruption commission, that is not public at all. So it does go all the way to the very top. And, you know, the truth will come out, and David McBride will be validated, and we will get justice for him. It might not be justice in the court, but we will bring the public on side. We will let them know. They will be fully informed about what happened to David McBride and what's at stake for them. Because if you can just be jailed for doing your job, that's something that affects everybody, and that shakes the foundations of our democracy. And if we have the government able to walk into the courtroom, which is supposed to be the one sacred place that we can turn for justice when there's been an overreach by the government, if the government can now come in and take that evidence away, the judge doesn't even see it, we don't have a democracy anymore. We're living in an autocracy.
Well, maybe we don't. Maybe you're right. That's exactly what we're in right now.
Yes.
And maybe, hopefully, that can change. Here's the other big question. I'm just thinking of all these things as you're talking. What the hell were you doing in Afghanistan in the first place?
I know. What a trillion-dollar disaster that was, you know. And we had no right to be there in the first place.
And shooting up the locals? Really?
Exactly. And it was propaganda. The war wouldn't have gone on for so long if we remained there. You know, it was just rubbish. It was just a waste of money, a waste of lives. And, you know, interestingly, we had the findings of the Royal Commission into Veteran Suicides here in Australia just this week. And one of the findings was that you are more likely as a soldier to suicide than you are to be killed in the field.
Wow.
That's pretty harrowing. Pretty harrowing thing, you know. And of course, now we've got David McBride, who does have war injuries. You know, he's got a complex PTSD, major depressive disorder, very vulnerable in custody. He's been gaslit his 11-year walk into his prison cell, gaslit all the way, and now he's sitting in a prison cell. You know, it's just the ultimate betrayal, you know, to him. He's a true believer. He went to war believing he was doing the right thing, fighting for our country, and it's just all turned around on him. But we are going to unravel the mess, and we are going to make sure that people find out the truth of this case, because it is too important. It's not about one man. It's about all of us, every single one of us, and our rights and our freedom to speak. So this case is emblematic of so many of our rights. And if we lose it, it's just one more chip away from autocracy. And that's where we're headed right now.
Are the public behind David McBride? Do they know enough about this? How widely is this story known? You got to ask these days, because it depends on what the media says and how it covers it. I know the Project did stuff and I've seen you on a few things, but, you know, this surely was a big story. It still is.
Yes. I mean, I think it's the most high-profile case in Australia, and the appeal will be as well. So there was a lot of media. But the problem with the case has been, Paul, that there's only been little bits of evidence that have been allowed to be, you know, revealed to the public. And so what a lot of people have done in the media, in a really lazy way of the mainstream fourth estate, is they've just filled in the little pockets of gaps, these gaping holes in the case with their own opinion, you know. So that's been really unfortunate and a real letdown of the media. So, you know, there's been some really good independent media that have come on side, and you know, there has been some mainstream media that have really investigated and understood and haven't just taken the easy way out. But we've seen the media fail here as well, the Fourth Estate. We really have, you know, where they are just wanting to keep their relationships going with their, you know, insiders in the government so they get the top story, you know. Like the media is just, the Fourth Estate is just part of the government, you know, really. Yeah. So that's been very disappointing.
So that's, in a kind of a way, part of the bigger problem that you were talking about. It's another piece part of the problem, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to cut through that mainstream media and get into the lounge rooms of mum and dads around Australia, but I think we're getting there. I do. I think this has, really frightened people, especially when they see some of the people who are alleged to have done these murders in Afghanistan walking around, travelling to Bali, free men. I mean, it's galling that David McBride is sitting in a prison cell where these people that everybody knows has got a whole lot of suspicion hanging over their head just get to walk free. And all of the government, you know, ministers that are involved as well just get promoted, and people head up commissions, you know, and $800,000 a year. I mean, it's quite sickening, but we can't let that distract us from the main game, and that's our democracy. So that's what this case is really about, is saving our democracy and making sure at least that we are educating Australians into what's at stake for them, you know. It really is.
Do you think the royal we here, because, I mean, there's you in Australia, but, I mean, it's interesting here too. Do you think we'll ever have names named, individuals identified, a true understanding of what exactly happened? Do you think that will ever come to light?
Yes, I do, because that's my mission. Mm. Yeah, it's part of representing David McBride, is ensuring that truth gets out there. I mean, there's a lot of publicly available information, you know, but nobody has been bothered to stitch it all together yet. So if you're a good investigative journalist, you could very, very easily...
Here's your opportunity.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have to do that for the case. So I've got a fair idea of who's involved, and it's all publicly available information. So it will come out. I am certain of it, you know. I mean, those people will have moved on to their new cushy jobs, or they're in retirement, or, you know, pass the baton on to a friend. But we will make sure that is exposed, and that, you know, David McBride is validated, because that's important. And I think Australians need to know what's going on, because it's a slippery slope that we're on at the moment, Paul, a very slippery slope into the autocracy.
How far down the slope, Eddie, are we?
So far down, but it's not too late. It's never too late. You never know what's around the corner. I think we're living in very scary times, and I don't want to sound alarmist. That's just a fact, you know.
It's just the way it is.
It is. Yeah. It's just the truth of the matter is that, but people don't realise, of course. So it's all about educating people on what's at stake at the moment. That is my concern, and what we hope to, emphasise in Dave's case is this is going on. But yes, there is a huge public following for David McBride. Hasn't equated to funding for his case yet, so that's where we really need some help. We've got enough to lock the grounds, but then we've got to run the appeal. And he's also written a book, if people want to know a little bit more about David McBride. He's written an amazing book about his life leading right up to the trial, and that's called The Nature of Honour. And I think Penguin have released that book. So it's a great book to understand who he is as a person.
Yeah, I often often wonder what it would be like to be in a situation where you have a choice of going about your normal life, not saying anything, or dealing with your conscience.
Yeah.
And putting yourself out there knowing that anything could happen and then doing it and then paying, and it's not all the way through. This is a journey, obviously, but then paying some pretty heavy consequences. And you mentioned that he's obviously under a lot of stress. But does he also know that if he does, I mean, what do I know? But if he does the right thing, he will probably be okay.
Yeah, he has his head held high. He says, I wouldn't change anything, not a thing, not a thing at all. He's a pathologically honest person, and he's a really good man. And I would hope that, more people are inspired to stand up when they see something wrong in their workplace or organisation and follow the lead of Dave McBride, because if we all do it, then it's not just one person getting picked off. We all stand up and say, no, we don't want any of this anymore. We should be able to speak out and retain our rights when we see something that is wrong. We shouldn't be silenced or scared with jail. He's not scared. You know, he always knew jail was on the table and it was the biggest price to pay. He's away from his two daughters and his former wife and his friends and community. It is a huge sacrifice for David McBride, but he maintains he wouldn't change it. Nothing, you know, if he dies in jail, he said, so be it. That's what he said the other day, which was pretty horrible to hear. Yeah. That if something happens to him, because he is scared.
Are they putting him in circumstances that are designed to intimidate him while he's in custody?
Oh, I don't know, but he's been moved around quite a bit. He's been in isolation because of the death threat. So, jails aren't safe. They're not safe,
No, I think we know that. And on the other side, you've got people still walking around who have murdered people.
Yes.
Going about their everyday Aussie lives.
Yeah, that's right. Traveling to Bali, drinking.
How can they live with that?
Yeah, well, narcissism, sociopathy. I mean, there's a lot of pathological reasons I think that people are able to sleep at night knowing that they've done bad things, people who have no empathy. So there's a lot of that, I'd say, pumping through the veins of those people. But that's something that's not in the veins of David McBride. He is someone that just could not tell, speak up. He just was compelled to.
And for you, Eddie, is it like a dog with a bone? You're a dog with a bone now, and you're not going to put it down, and or you're going to chase it until however the saying goes. But you know what I mean.
Absolutely. I'm very tenacious. People know me as I've given up my practice pretty much just to focus on this case. I'm doing it pro bono. I don't expect to get paid, because I'd actually feel a bit yucky getting paid because it's so important, I just will do it anyway. I have to pay the barristers at some point. I'm not going to give up until we get justice for David McBride and we, try to restore our democracy. It's too important. I've got an 11-year-old son. I don't want him growing up in a world where you know, politicians are lying. I mean, it's outrageous watching them in Parliament yelling at each other like school children, you know, swearing at each other. It's just like, you know, one major party against the other major party, you know, and the rest of us in Australia just sitting here, where's our voice? Well, it's gone. The donors have taken it. The lobbyists, the people that are filling our politicians' pockets have taken our democratic voice away. And people in Australia don't always realise that that's what's happened. But that's why we live in such an unjust and unfair society, is because we don't have a say. One voice, one vote. That's not what's going on. That's not what's going on here. It's one donor, one vote. You know, if you've got enough money, you can buy influence and decisions in this country. Our Western democracy has been hijacked, unfortunately, and they are trying to take the wheel away from us. And we need to get our car back and get democracy reinstated.
My granddad didn't go to war in the Second World War for that.
Yeah, my dad was in the Second World War, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, in Papua New Guinea.
Same. My granddad was in Papua New Guinea, in the Australian Army. He didn't go to war to have this happen. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And McBride went to war thinking he was doing a good thing. But that's what happened when everyone got to Afghanistan. I think where that culture of murder and blooding and all of those horrible things that happened over there, I think it grew out of that because, you know, people went over there thinking, I'm going to fight the good fight for our country. And they get there and they realise that the war is bullshit, that it is just propaganda, that they're not doing any good for anybody. You know, it's just like 9 to 5, everyone, you know, fights and then packs their guns away, and in the morning they get up again and they're just fighting this useless battle that's only going on because they still are there, you know, and because Uncle Sam told us to, basically.
Reminds me of Apocalypse Now, the movie. Yeah. Actually, very similar, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, unbelievable.
Okay, Eddie, two things. Yeah. If people want to donate to this cause, okay, we're here in New Zealand, but I'm sure that can be done cross borders. What's the best way to do it? Because there will be some who want to help out there, I'm sure.
Wonderful. So you can just Google Chuffed Fundraiser David and Goliath, David McBride Chuffed Fundraiser. Chuffed is the platform, and chuck some money in there. That would be wonderful. Or they can
How much do you need?
We need a lot. It's very expensive. I've got two barristers briefed and they're not cheap. They're very good. They're doing discounted rates, but it's still, you know, we're a long way away from the target. You know, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah. Think of the government, how much they're throwing at this. And it's not just the government. It's the Attorney General appears in court. There are three different parties that we're up against, and it's millions and millions of dollars. We're doing it on the smell of an oily rag. We need a few hundred thousand dollars. We've got nothing like that at the moment. So we've got enough to lodge the appeal, but we're hoping that the public on such an important public issue matter will get behind us and help fund this appeal, because it'll be a win for all of us if we can win this.
And the timeline for the next phase of this is what?
So we lodge the appeal, and then when we get our appeal date, we lodge our submissions for the appeal. So look, the wheels of justice move very slowly. We are hoping to get on in March next year, which will be just before the federal election. So a lot of people will be paying attention to that appeal come election time to see what the government is going to promise, because we would like the government to do the right thing and just pardon David McBride. But it's unlikely that they're going to do that.
Well, they'd have to admit stuff then, Eddie, wouldn't they?
Yeah,
they'd have to say, oh, yeah, we did something.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, pass on our regards to him.
I will. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to spread the word.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.